When are you going to start reading?
Well, my name is Jennifer Mabley. I'm 45 years old. Today is July 5th, 2018, and I'm speaking with my aunt, Sean.
And Sean. My name is Sean Dupin, and I'm 80 years old. This is a birthday gathering we never have in this family. We don't get together that much. And Jennifer, although I totally like her, I hardly ever see her. But I remember years ago when she first arrived on the scene as an infant, she was so tiny and she wasn't very healthy. And now you wouldn't want to mess with her. She looks in great shape. And she's like this gymnast. And she's really cool. And I like her when I do things with her. She's fun and she's nice. But I always wondered, you're adopted.
I am.
And I'm a stepchild.
Mm-hmm.
And this family is very warm and open and you can't fault them for discriminating against us. I don't think. Do you think?
They never have.
So even to mention that I'm a stepchild seems like bull to me because my stepfather was wonderful. He was probably a better father to me than he was to my four brothers and her father. And
why do you think that was?
I think they're just nice people, sort of. I don't feel like a lot of my friends just are very, lots of sibling rivalry. Mm-hmm. I don't feel it because I was so much older than, I'm like in a different category than they are.
How much older are you than your siblings and how many siblings do you have?
I have four siblings. They're all men, male, and the first one was your dad, Ty. He's 7 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so cute. And I felt that I took care of him all the time when he was little. And we would do plays together. Only I would be like the big bad wolf and he would be Little Red Riding Hood. Now, this is a very masculine looking man. He's, you know, not, you know, but when he's a little kid, he's really cute. And I remember carrying him up the Empire State Building. And but wow. He told you and your sister that I locked him out in the snow.
I did hear about that story.
And I thought I counted to 10. And then I let him back in. And that I had been really the one who took care of him. A lot of the time.
We know he sort of over-exaggerates. Did you get in trouble for that?
For locking out incident? In the snow? No. I think my mom was just relieved that I got him out of her hair.
She probably didn't even know, right?
No. No. Until they would leave us alone. I mean,
it's different than
different from today. I was the adult when they left for a couple of weeks or something. And
you had to take care of all four of the boys?
Well, they weren't all there yet because the youngest one. Okay, so after Ty came twins, and they were about 10 years younger than me.
Okay. And then, who are they?
That's Dan and Dale. And when they were little, they were just like a little team. They talked to each other in the playpen and nobody could understand but them what they were saying. They grew up playing guitars together and they played football together and they seemed to really enjoy each other, but now not so much. And then there's Steve that kind of came as I was like leaving for college. And he was just a really cute baby who tried so hard to do stuff. He would not give up. He was just, and he had red hair. And when he was a teenager, he had this beautiful mane like a lion.
Of curls.
It was so cute. But when I think of them, I just smile because I think they're all wonderful. And I really don't. I kind of was jealous of my cousin that was my age that we lived with for a while.
Who is that?
Frank Hollister. But now I'm not.
He lived with you.
We lived with them because my dad had been in the war, and my dad had, you know, been a bomber, and and he sort of had post-traumatic stress, and so his family kind of subsidized mine for a while, and we lived with them.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And but I loved living with them because it was more kid. It was the kid. And there was one, his sister was younger, so she was closer to Ty's age, and I was about the exact age as Frank Hollister.
Okay.
But then I was aware of gender differences, because as we got older, he got a lot more leeway than I did.
More freedom?
More freedom. And then my father tried to figure out how to be a farmer, and I was helping him all the time. I followed him around. And my own biological father, not that he didn't like me, but he wasn't, it wasn't the safe place to be. And so it was better with Frank. I was glad. I told the kids in nursery school that my mom and I were getting married.
How often did you see your biological father growing up?
At first, when he kidnapped me, quite a while, but then he went into the service, and then I didn't see him till I was like, you know, in my 20s, one time.
Wow.
I think he was an alcoholic, and that was the problem. And like once he left me in a car, you know, and I couldn't get out, and he just forgot me. I mean, it wasn't mean. He just, drinking is a problem.
Why do you think he took you?
I think he probably didn't want my mom to leave him. And that's what I see now with my own daughter. The sort of, this is so embarrassing that you're leaving me. But she was leaving the behaviors, not, she didn't hate him.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like that. It just didn't seem safe. Which is the same thing I've done several times. Left people that were fun, and I don't I don't regret having been with them, but I didn't think it was safe to stay or a good idea.
But those were smart decisions ultimately, right?
But then
every one of them.
They were. But then I think there are good men. Like, I really think Ty is good.
Mm-hmm.
And your dad. And I thought, was he a good father to you?
He was. He was. He was there a lot. And considering he had a very busy professional life and was so engaged in all these social justice activities and wonderful causes growing up, he would go to a lot of meetings. But he would come to parent-teacher conferences, and he would somehow show up to gymnastics meets. And I look at other parents, and I don't know how he did that, because it seems like things are much busier and much more difficult now, and it's harder to get places quickly, and there's more traffic, and things are spread out farther. So I really respect that he was able to somehow prioritize getting across the city to get to something that was, you know, important to his child. Maybe not as important to him, but it was important for me, and he found a way to do it. And so I really respect that. That's really impressive to me.
Yeah. I always said my mother thought when she married him that his family was so nice. His extended family, and their name was Mabley, and that's your name. And I remember we would go to like Estes Park. And at that time, my daughter thought you were the hot one. You were a gymnast, and she had long, beautiful hair, and she was very athletic. And then each kid in the little kids wanted to be best friends with a little older kid. And so you were the one that she was, oh, I want to be her friend. But then there was another one coming up that wanted to be Shenandoah's friend. But then that went on for a while. And one time you came to be in a gymnastics meet at Stanford and Maples Auditorium or something. And Shenandoah and I had come to see you, and we were in the way up high in the nosebleed area. And we looked down at the Minnesota gymnastics team, and there was one gymnast who kept picking up things and cleaning up, and it was like, oh, there's Jennifer, because Mabley's are nice, and they try to do contribute, and we couldn't even see her, but we saw one bee down there working away, and that was you. I thought that was so funny.
That is funny. I don't remember that part of being a gymnast, but yeah, you do have to tidy up.
And then there was the thing, your wedding, where your husband picked you up and carried you, because that was a tradition in North Korea or something, in weddings?
It's a South Korean tradition, apparently, and we did a little bit of research into traditional wedding practices and tried to make it unique and gather a little bit of Korean heritage, which I don't have a lot of, and we tried to put some Swedish things into the wedding as well. But that was one thing that we thought was going to be unique, and we wanted to try it. If Todd could actually lift me,
no,
we
but
were
he's
see if it could happen.
He looks like the he's big and strong looking.
Lift me.
Yeah, and you, as a gymnast, would make it easy for him. And there were all these other gymnasts at that wedding.
There were.
But one of the foreign exchange students, this guy from Thailand, he was really kind of shy. And I remember he asked me to dance, and I thought, holy cow, there's all these beautiful young gymnasts. Why is he asking some old lady to dance? Well, I think he was shy.
He was so sweet. Yeah.
And so sweet. And then there was another, you guys did this foreign exchange thing all the time. Where did you go?
I didn't go anywhere.
That's interesting. Why?
The only one. Because I would have had to leave gymnastics for a year.
Oh, that's why.
And I also didn't want to leave my friends, and I wasn't outgoing like that.
Uh-huh.
In school.
That's
it
interesting.
It would have been a good opportunity.
But you really got tight with the visiting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we had Petter from Norway.
Yeah, and he's still connected.
Keeps in touch with us. It's
and
wonderful.
Came to your wedding.
He did.
That was so cool, I thought.
He did. Yeah, that was very impressive.
He's and well-loved. You were a sharp dresser. You dressed the way stylish people dress. Not so much with your sister.
It's different. Let's get into your dressing. You have a fabulous sense of style for color and vibrancy and unique outfits, and you can sew anything.
Not
what
like your
inspires
mom.
Inspires you.
I think it's fun. I think that when I was growing up, we didn't have any money, and there was no way to compete and be like everybody else. But there were these second cousins of your dad's dad.
Okay.
And they were big movie stars, Jane
That's
and
right.
Audrey Meadows.
That's right.
So Audrey was in the Honeymooners, and she wore these dresses that were like dumpy house dresses, but they were new every time. So we'd get these, you know, missionary boxes from them, because they'd actually been the children of missionaries.
And I didn't know that.
Oh my God, they walked over China in bare feet and in with their stuff in a wheelbarrow, you know, when the communists
oh my.
Came
no,
in.
I didn't know that.
Oh my God, you didn't know that?
No, that they are children of missionaries.
In China, and and I have a coat of theirs that's like, it's this old felt on the outside and mink on the inside that belonged to their dad. And it was when their first language was Hong. No, it was the other one, was it? Maybe it was Mandarin.
Cantonese or Mandarin?
I think it was Mandarin. But, and this, which is so weird because people see them as these high maintenance, probably New England type.
White Americans.
Upper class Americans. They were poor as dirt. They came here hardly speaking English. They, both Jane married Steve Allen and was in movies and things, and Audrey was in musicals and The Honeymooners, which their brother was a lawyer, so he got residuals for them. So they were quite well off.
Wow.
But they weren't, they presented as kind of fancy ladies, but the reality is they were tough as nails and had survived amazing things. But anyway, those darn dresses she wore on The Honeymooners were the ugliest, most common, most normal thing, and they were new. And they weren't flattering on me, and I wore those in high school, and I don't like uniforms. I'm a funny shape, and I just am more comfortable in pants, and I just like to wear things that I like, and colors, and I do a lot of costuming.
And has that been since high school then?
Yeah. And so now I'm president of Women Walking Tall, which is a stilt walking troupe. And the stilt walkers, you know, height is everything, but costumes really help to get your attention. So you won't want to really be a drab little mouse on stilts. That's not the point of it. So you want to kind of stand out and be different. And I could never excel as being regular. So, but I could be really different and do that well. So living in the San Francisco Bay Area.
You do it great.
Yeah, and then there was the 60s where my husband was an artist and, you know, we ran around with the rock stars and the stilt walkers, you know, worked for the Grateful Dead and Bill Graham. And so the kind of colorful, bizarre things were a plus. Mm-hmm. And I worked with schizophrenics. My main job was working in mental health as a creative arts therapist and program designer and, you know, running the groups and things like that. And it being short, you kind of get overlooked. So I thought that the makeup and the costuming kind of branded me to be the group leader. And the people would just follow me and listen to me. And I felt the costuming helped there because I think they see things through sort of a fog and they're more internally preoccupied and externally engaged.
Do you think that the way you dressed helped your patients feel more at ease or more connection with you because it was a pretty color or something shiny? Or, I mean, you always had and such great clothes.
Yeah, and the first place I worked actually was the state hospital for the developmentally delayed.
Okay.
And the Down syndrome kids, I'd wear fuzzy things, and so they would run up and touch me, and they loved the colors. And, you know, I would like lead the parade because all the other staff was wearing white iron starched outfits, and they didn't perceive that as cuddly and
safe.
Yeah, and I would build, like, for the deaf kids, I had built stages with music under it so they could dance on top. And I would roll around on the mats with them, like the gymnast thing. And the OTs, they would do what they called vestibular stimulation, like brush the kids with sable brushes. And I would just hug them and roll around on the ground with them and kind of fight with them and stuff. And they seemed to enjoy that. And other people probably didn't think it was appropriate, but I got a really positive response.
So it was obviously working.
And I really felt good about that work. I had a long career. being a civil servant in the mental health, but I got to be sort of the Martha Stewart of the mental health center, mm-hmm. and did the parties and the parades and the acknowledging events, like when 9/11 happened. It happened in my space, which was the biggest space in the hospital at San Francisco General Mental Rehabilitation Facility. And we couldn't get any of the chaplains or anything to come over, but we gathered in the arts and crafts and dance area. Mm-hmm. And I was the one that had to do that. Not that I'm particularly religious, but the ritual has always been something I enjoy. When I retired, I was really glad because other people had made more money in the meantime, but by staying in this civil servant position, I had a retirement. And wow. I was very grateful to have a pension, and I feel really bad about what's happening with the power of the unions, because I think the unions help build a strong middle class, and I was very active in the union stuff.
Okay.
So good life. And you did the gymnastics thing, and then you moved, or you were...
I moved to Salt Lake City from Minnesota, where I grew up and went to college.
And you did, you were a big deal with recycling.
I did do a lot of recycling.
But when you were on TV and everything about this great recycling that was going to happen at the
Olympics,
what happened there?
Well, our contractor for the composting kind of fell through. So that was a little challenging for us last minute. But we ended up pulling off all the waste and recycling, the waste management for the whole Olympic Games, for all of the venues that were temporarily built and deconstructed. And we were in charge of all of the employees and all the volunteers that we asked to clean up trash. And my group also did the snow removal and the cleaning. But my passion was the waste and recycling. And we got the contract for all the waste haulers, designed all the bins, figured out how many and where to put them all, and where the best places for utilization and for picking up and consolidating it all and picking up with the larger trucks and, you know, just the logistics portion of it. That was a very challenging but really rewarding job for me. And it was a short-term thing, and everyone knew that. And so I think that was also kind of a relief to know, oh my gosh, it'll be over at some point. We have this goal and we're working towards it. And that was a really fun time in my life, because you also simultaneously got to be witness to a lot of amazing athletes performing and competing with whatever their event was. And the fortunate thing is there is trash generated at every sport venue, so we got to go to quite a bit of those while we were still working. So it was fortunate. It was an amazing job, an amazing opportunity, and I, you know, I look at every single Olympic game since then and think, I wonder what their system is like. And, you know, my dad has been to a couple of Olympics, and he always sends me a picture of the trash and the recycling. And everywhere he goes, he sends me a picture of somebody's recycling, and I still take pictures of recycling bins in other countries just because I'm interested in that. So that's always stuck with me. But I mean, we used to recycle. It's my mom and dad's fault, because we used to recycle back when you had to drive it to the recycling facility and, you know, collect it in these rusty old tin cans and things like that. But that's a weird hobby and interest of mine, is garbage.
What? But you know, it's mine.
It's still there. Yeah, and you find much better things. I try and make it into something else, and you actually make it into art and find fantastic things to decorate stilts with. And and I'm sure a lot more things like that, right?
Yeah.
What were some of your best finds?
Oh, my God. You know, there's so many. What was just recently, it was like just this plastic fencing thing that I put around the doll crying as an image of the immigrant babies being separated from their moms. But it started because I worked in big mental health facilities. They don't have a huge art budget. So I would go to recycling centers. When I taught like art therapy at San Francisco State, I had mandatory, everybody had to go to a place called East Bay Depot in Alameda County and one in San Francisco, which was called Scraps, Scroungers Reusable Art Parts. And the teachers went there and the artists and the art therapists to get cheaper materials to use so you didn't have to be stingy with it, mm-hmm. so people could be flashy and creative. And I wrote my master's thesis about using recycled materials to generate interactions mm-hmm. within groups. And and right now, work with this the White Elephant Sale, which is for in benefits the Oakland Museum in Oakland, California, where they're the largest non-governmental contributor to the museum, and they make millions of dollars, and it goes on. It's been going for like 55 years or something, and they make, I think it's like $4 million a year and donate it to the museum. And I, in my house, have a lot of junk that hasn't been used yet. And I'm hoping that my buddies from the White Elephant Sale will, after my family picks through it, will come over and take the rest of it back to the White Elephant Sale.
And you'll be the number one donor.
Yeah. Well, the one that started it, that happened with her. And the intake of, she had everything in her house with a little tag on which department it went into and how much it should be.
Oh,
and so trucks came out and cleared out her house.
Wow.
And they went back, and that year they went, big rise in profits. And they get things from theaters, they get things from estates, they get things from people. If people at the end, it goes for a year and then they clear everything out and start over again. They've got a whole block, a building, a warehouse.
What a fantastic
sale. And it's amazing, the stuff. And the people that work there are really fun. It's like another family for me.
I'm sure. And they all know you.
And because when I was working, I used to get like all the art supplies and posters for the inpatients on their, they could pick something on their wall, clothes for people that were not normal sizes or mm-hmm. not the regular sizes. And reasonably priced. Mm-hmm. And that's where I get a lot of my clothes reasonably priced. And I kind of do some wearable art stuff mm-hmm. as art pieces. So I really enjoy that.
Well, and you have you were telling me yesterday that you, so long as you can cut armholes or a hole for a neck and hem it, anything can be worn, and you rent or pay for sewing time
mm-hmm.
once a week for 3 hours. That's a fantastic deal.
Yeah. And
you don't need to have a sewing machine, but yet you can accumulate things that you've picked up throughout the week and then transform it into clothing.
True. And we had this big fashion show at the last big show we had at the Craneway, where they have rock concerts and things, and thousands of people come to the quilt show, but there's also the wearable arts section, and that's me. And I get all the people to make things that are uniquely suited to them, because a lot of old ladies have gotten a little large, and you like fashion. It's not fashion that I'm focused on, it's personal style
mm-hmm.
that something that's flattering, something that's comfortable, something that's unique. Mm-hmm. And I want to encourage that, and I want to encourage reuse, upscale, you know, repurpose, cut it up, use it again.
That's the best goal for that stuff, because otherwise it really would be thrown away.
And we have more than one use.
Yes.
Like my straw necklace, then I can say, straws are not good. What are you wearing straws around your neck? Well, they're a pretty color, and they match my outfit, and let's talk about straws.
And why we may not need as many.
Good point.
What is something that you recently changed somebody's opinion about as far as a wearable art piece? Can you think of anything?
A wearable art piece.
That you
convinced someone? Okay, so there's one lady in our group who she has a personal style. Every like 2 or 3 years, she makes 6 dresses out of different fabrics, the same pattern. She referred to it as her life in vogue with Calvin Klein. And these are the same kind of dumpy house dresses that I wore in high school, but larger sizes, of course. And she literally, that's all she wears, hiking, to parties, everything.
Really?
So we had this like contest, find this lady, find Mabry in the whole show. And the kids were finding her right away.
Funny.
So I talked about Ceres. So I had 3 of her dresses, which were same pattern, same design, different fabric. And so when my best friend died the year before, she was like 350 pounds, but she is a costume designer.
Mm-hmm.
And she helped me with a lot of my costumes and got me into the quilt thing.
Ah.
And she had made 3 Moomoo-like dresses, mm-hmm. really well constructed, but for a 350-pound short woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I had those displayed because they were this artist who does fabric, Kay Fassett, I'm saying his name wrong, but he's pretty famous if you're into fiber.
Okay.
And they were beautiful, so I hung those up as an example of a series,
mm-hmm.
a personal style, that they were beautiful. And then I had this statue I'd used for a parade to save the mental health facility I worked in, who was supposed to be the Catholic goddess of, or patron saint of the mentally ill.
Okay.
So I had this huge, tall, skinny, purple one in the middle of these 3 short, fat dresses, talking about don't discriminate, no body shaming,
mm-hmm.
but just celebrate differences.
Because
mm-hmm. I like the idea of celebrating differences. Don't be ashamed of them.
I think that's a very good lesson for everybody.
I think so. A lot of people get so uptight about not being like everybody else. And we never were, because on the farm, we weren't like our neighbors or anything. But I got along fine. I didn't really get discriminated against.
Good.
And I think my mom was really good at getting along with everybody.
She was. She was.
And that is a great gift, because, you know, you need to be able to have empathy. Like, I have a friend who's tall and blonde and beautiful and rich and smart and really nice. I'm not jealous of her. I just am so happy she is my friend.
Mm-hmm.
But she used to hide. You know, the chauffeur would take her to school and she'd hide. And, you know, I don't see her as much as I'd like to, because she's a different class than I am. They have more money.
Mm-hmm.
And that can, I know with mental health, the people that were really rich didn't get treatment. They got protected. The people that were really poor, nobody figured out they were needed treatment.
Mm-hmm.
The totally rich and the extremists there didn't get good mental health treatment. It was kind of more in the middle there.
So how are all the ones in the middle coming to you to get help? How did they?
It was a captive audience. They're locked up.
But how did the wealthy ones not?
Oh, because they would have
been in the hospital, right?
No, and maybe they were pretending like they didn't have a problem.
Okay.
But, and then a lot of the really poor ones were in the criminal justice system. Bad idea. Bad idea to have privatized prisons. Bad idea to have privatized mental health centers and hospitals. Just, it's not a profit thing. You don't work in it for the money. That's, mm-hmm. you gotta like wanna help the people. And when you make it about money, to me, it gets ugly. Then they, you know, are limiting the water they can wash their hands in and the food they eat. And I really don't, I think it's a public service healthcare. And I think mental health treatment should be public. And I think prisons should be that way. And I think fewer people should go to prison. There should be more treatment.
They don't belong in prison.
No. They don't belong in the streets. And they, you know, it's very wrong the way the system hasn't quite figured it out yet or been able to, because the people living in the street gets bigger and bigger.
I can't figure out why that is.
Because it's income inequality is getting greater. The rich are getting richer and fewer. The middle class people like us are disappearing.
Falling behind.
My daughter doesn't have health insurance. My daughter doesn't have retirement. Those were two things that I would like for everybody. And I feel like in my retirement, I have dignity, and so many people don't. And if just a few things had been unlucky, I could be a, you know, bag lady in the street, or dead probably. Mm-hmm. But I've been really lucky. And you seem to have a really nice husband.
Yeah, I like him. He is a great husband. He's, what's it been now? 13 years this fall.
Really?
It was 13 years
from
ago.
From the wedding?
Yeah, in September.
I remember your mom was not doing well then.
Not as great.
And people really were thinking, well, there has to be an intervention, because she wasn't looking at how sick she was. She was pretending she wasn't sick. Mm-hmm. But she was sick.
Yeah, and the big question is, she denied it, but did she really understand that she was as sick as she was? I don't know the answer to that.
None of us did. Because you really tried to get her
to just have a different outlook on the way she felt and acted about her health. I did.
I remember her as being slender and athletic and...
Look at those pictures out there.
Oh my God, she's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, she wasn't beautiful. She was like, her eyes were dead. She didn't sparkle. Mm-hmm. She was so competent in everything. I thought she was the perfect mother. I had trouble with my daughter, and I would call her for help, and she sent me books and stuff.
Really?
Yeah. And I thought, oh, if I could be more like her. But, man, at the end, she hurt, and her brother had died of this rare thing, and she was sick, and she pretended she wasn't sick. But she wouldn't do anything. She wouldn't move. She wasn't...
And as smart of a woman as she was, I don't think she wanted to face that reality of learning more about the disease.
The illness.
And researching or even testing herself. I don't know if she actually knew she had it. She knew she had symptoms. But
and she was a med tech.
I know. And very smart.
And my mom's last husband, who was a famous doctor, he respected. And I, even when I went to college, I really liked the med techs, because I'm like an airhead. But, you know, they were like more centered. I've had some really good friends that are med techs. And I kind of respect them. I was doing a voiceover thing for a film for the hospital, mm-hmm. and we didn't have any white uniforms, and it was Saturday because we were filming in the weekend. And I went, I know where to get it, and ran down to the med tech thing and came back with uniforms for everybody.
Oh, that's so funny.
And because I know med techs, mm-hmm. and they're in there.
And you knew the outfit.
Yeah, I knew the outfit. I got it. Played that role too. I was the patient, the staff, I went there just to do the voiceover, but I ended up playing all the roles.
Including the voiceover.
Yeah.
That's great. I didn't realize you did voiceovers until this trip, this 80th birthday trip.
Well, it was kind of old. I was already retired. My girlfriend and I decided we would go to voiceover school. And the people in the Sierra Club that we were in said, well, where are you guys nowadays? You haven't been to the hike. And so we told them we were going to pole dancing school. And this is when we're, in our mid-70s. Uh-huh. And but the trouble with that is that I was fine with you have engineers. Mm-hmm. When the voiceover people have to do all their stuff by themselves and be their own engineer, not me.
Okay.
And finally, when I got an agent and everything, then it was like I'd already planned a trip,
Okay.
And I couldn't go. Or one time they called me up for something and my hot water heater had just broken. And there was water all over the place. And I was, standing there in my underwear sopping up things. And I couldn't make it. And so finally they stopped calling me.
But you are in the promotion for the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
Then you can leave it at that. You've left your mark.
Just fine. I feel like I got to do a lot of things and just taste it. But it was like I got to be in the opera on stilts.
That is amazing.
The San Francisco Opera, that was really nice. I even said words. And I got paid. I mean, that was fun. And because of the stilts, we went to galas of very, fundraisers for,
that must have been fun.
Fancy ones with,
very fun.
Or even like things like in a country club, where there were no brown people, no Jews, and no black people, my stilters were
but
all
the
stilters
those. Were there. You brought
we were
the diversity
there. We came in, and it was the first time any of us had been in Burlington Country Club.
I'm sure.
And probably the last. Yeah, that was good. It was
you got to open their eyes to the other side of the opera.
So now I didn't even like opera before. Now I've had for years. I have season tickets, and I go.
That's great.
I go to the operas now. I know them all.
And it changed your perspective on the opera.
For sure.
And I'm sure everybody at the Burlingame Country Club, it changed their perspective on stilters.
Oh, my God, I was so bad. I told this one guy came by with all his friends, and I told him I was his mother, and he was so embarrassed. And we went into this whole, improv thing about how what he was like as a child and everything. His friends were like, oh, my God.
Tell us more.
Yeah. The guy looked like he was going to die.
Oh, that's great.
No, they're kidding. I don't know these people.
I just met this lady. I just met her. Oh, that's funny.
Mm. Jean just walked in and went in there, started taking her clothes off. I wonder what that's about.
She's going to shower. I'm going to swimming, and I'm going to pull out suits.
So we have a minute and 20 minutes left of your interview.
Oh, we have to keep going.
Well, this is the conclusion of the interview with your niece. But we can continue with other interviews with the rest of your
family. Said I was your favorite aunt.
Yes, you are.
Because there are no other. That was such a good answer.
I
love that.
I'm so glad that we came out to see you and we got to celebrate this momentous occasion.
Yeah.
And all of the siblings came. That's phenomenal.
That's wonderful. We don't get together.
We
but
don't.
Jean over there, I think it started with Jean.
I'm sure.
because
here are two possible swimsuits, two cover-ups. If
thanks.
She doesn't want to come down.
Okay.
Jean is amazing. We were really happy to have her in our family for sure.
It's quite the addition.
Yes. All the new additions. I don't know about you, but I liked all their ex-wives, and I like all of them. And I think they're happier with what they got now and at the moment. Now,
I hope so.
And the other ones, I don't want to not be friends with. I'm sorry.
I know. It's hard,
isn't it? You really.